Blog Talk Radio.
Run the jewels, 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 jewels.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matt Weston. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. Tonight, I'm joined by the biggest, fast, drunkest one of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
Woo!
Yeah.
It's going fantastic.
Well,
fabulous.
Good.
Babatonio is philanthropist.
Well, BFD, did you know that depending on Brian Hoyer, to win a football game usually doesn't work out very well?
What is this language? Why does the masthead always have to be so negative? Oh, my God.
Well, last week, if you didn't listen to the episode, we talked about kind of the Texan system, like the type of game that they have to play for them to win. And it's kind of like one of those things where they have to play almost perfectly. It's a lot of the same sort of playing that we've seen kind of from the Minnesota Vikings this year as well. We won't get into that. If you're more interested in it, you can listen to last week's episode. But the main component to this Houston Texans system is the defense. And I'm telling you, this defense allowed 30 points and probably should even allow more, but again, they were able to receive some field goal luck from the opponent. In this game, Hoyer did throw 43 passes. He completed 26 of them for 293 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Now, this was in spite of the fact that Houston was never down by more than 8 points, and they averaged 4.8 yards a carry in this one. Now, they put the game in his hands, and Houston ended up losing. So, BFD, do you think Houston could win a game where they need to score more than 30 points? And what do you think about how the coaching staff managed this offense?
I think this was like a repeat of, I don't know if you can say the really the Kansas City Chiefs game, but kind of earlier in the season going back to where we just completely abandoned the run. And what I don't get about this game especially is that the run wasn't half bad. I mean, Alpha Blue got 4 yards, if I remember correctly. But you had Polk and Grimes are making gash yardage against the Bills. They looked wonderful out there. And then we're still letting Brian Hoyer throw the ball 43 times. It's like early in the season when the combination of Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett were leading the NFL in pass attempts. Why are you giving one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL 43 pass attempts when your running game is knocking out almost 5 yards a carry? It's so counterintuitive. Yes, we were playing behind, but like you mentioned, 8 points was the max. You can still stick to your plan. You can still stick to your run game down by 8 points. You don't abandon what's working so well for you to let Brian Hoyer start chunking the ball everywhere. Because here's what happened. After the touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins, Hoyer went 4 for 12 for 52 yards and a pick. 4 for 12 for 52 yards against a prevent defense and a pick. And again, the pick was the last play of the game, but it still counts. That's what you're 4 for 12 for 52 yards, 4.5 yards a pass. It's utterly ridiculous just to even think about. That was the fourth quarter game plan for the Houston Texans offense, when that is not their strength. That's not what you want those guys out there doing. So if I remember, and I didn't look at it, but I think the calculation was that Brian Hoyer went 12 for 27 in the second half. Once again, why the hell is Brian Hoyer throwing the ball that much? That's what you get when you let Brian Hoyer throw the ball 27 times. Did you get 12 completions?
I believe the game tied at the half as well. So I guess I kind of talk more about, you know, why they didn't run the ball. To me, the increase in the passing attempts, if you look at the year-long numbers, are the fact that they played behind a lot, so they had to throw the ball a lot even when they didn't want to, and also the fact that Arian Foster was injured. And so they felt like just by default, they're going to have to throw the ball a lot more without him is kind of like the logic behind it going this year. But last year, even with Foster out, you know, he missed, you know, five games or so. They still ran the ball a ton. And so it's just kind of like a disconnect this year. I don't know why they're doing it. Do you have any reasons at all, you know, why Bill O'Brien and this offense is calling so many passing plays?
No, I don't. It's just, it's completely inexcusable. You know, I have a lot of problems with the offensive game plan. I have a lot of problems with Bill O'Brien as a head coach, and this is just yet another disconnect between what we should be doing offensively and what we did offensively. This is not a team. Look at who's receiving the dadgum ball. Cecil Shorts has been balling. DeAndre Hopkins is, one of the top two or three best wide receivers in the NFL. But otherwise, you're throwing the ball to Nate Washington, Ryan Griffin, Garrett Graham, C.J. Fedorowicz. Your running backs are not bad out of the backfield, but it's not like you're throwing to Jamal Charles. It's just such a huge disconnect. It's awing to me how I just don't even know what to say.
Yeah, and I had a huge problem with them just because they're running the ball great, and the Buffalo Bills rush defense isn't good. They're 23rd in defensive DVOA heading into last week, and their pass defense is much better than their run defense. And they're abysmal, and they were just controlling the line of scrimmage as far as the offensive line goes. And the only thing you could think is they were behind. Yeah, they were behind by 8 points. The game, I'm pretty sure, was tied at halftime. And I just had a huge problem with that. They need to stick to the run more often. If they run the ball more and Brian Hoyer's throwing less, there's a possible chance they win this game, even though the defense did give up 30 points. Going back to the defense, do you think Houston can win these types of games where they have to score 30 points to win? And do you think there's a time this year they're going to have to need to do that at all?
Well, look how many points we've scored 30 times in a game this season.
Zero.
Zero. So this is not a high-scoring offensive team. This is not a team that you can say, hey, we need to go drop 35 on this team to give us a chance to win. We're not going to do that. That's not how we play. Okay, we had scored 31 against Jacksonville. We are one of the worst-scoring offenses in the league at 21 points per game, which puts us in the top, 6 at this point. This is not a team that's made to score points. Oh, and let's also figure out, that 21 points per game average, how many of those points came in trash time against the Falcons and the Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a team that can score a lot of points, and Brian Hoyer is not a quarterback that is going to win you a game if he needs to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this entire turnaround, you can look at Hoyer's stats, you can look at the touchdown interception ratio, you can look at his 60% completion percentage, you can look at yards per attempt, but I think a lot of those numbers are skewed just because he played three of those games in garbage time where he put up 24 points and throwing against the team's third string. And I saw some stats on Twitter, here are Hoyer's stats for the year, he's still good, but they don't take effect on those outliers. And on a per-game basis, he hasn't been good since he's been a starter for this team. Now, despite the issues, Houston still had a chance to win this one. They were down 27-21 with 1:53 left on the clock, and they did have three timeouts too. And the offense decided to throw the ball four times. The first pass was behind to Washington. The second pass was low to Hopkins. And both these guys were wide open according to NFL standards. The third pass was a fade to Shorts where he was wide open. And either Hoyer threw it to the wrong shoulder or Shorts turned around the wrong way. It's one of those things that we will never know. Only the coaching staff and Hoyer and Shorts will ever know exactly what happened there. But that may have been – that was at least a 45-yard gain if they complete that one. And the fourth pass was a blitz is coming on. Hoyer looks to the left. Shorts Hopkins is double coverage. And he doesn't have time to go back to the right and throw a pass to Washington. He gets hit as he throws the ball and almost gets picked off. And they end up losing as a result. So to me, I think this perfectly encapsulates Brian Hoyer's play. You can win with him, but not because of him. And Houston depended on him in this one, and they lost as a result. BFT, what are your thoughts on this assessment?
No, I think that series is a perfect example, because what really stuck out to me in the second half especially, and it stuck out all season, is that Brian Hoyer's mid-to-short game accuracy is questionable at best. That what you have is you have a pretty smart quarterback who's pretty good at reading the defense. He's had lapses, but he's not bad in that aspect of the game. What he can't do is he can't make the short and mid-tier passes with regular accuracy. There's a reason DeAndre Hopkins leads the league. I don't know if he leads the league. He leads the league in one-handed catches because he has to. There's a reason he looks like a highlight film, because he has to cover up for Hoyer's accuracy issues. So, we can talk about the drops. Yes, the drops suck. Nate Washington, the tight end, lots of drops, Shorts drops. Hopkins had a big drop on Sunday. But when you're throwing the ball, what I saw most common was on slants, crosses, that Hoyer was slow to release the ball, slow to get the ball out, and throwing behind the receiver. So, you know, that's just a terrible combination. And that one drive that you picked on, that's it right there. It was three poor balls, one medium, one short, one deep. And the deep balls, I think he technically had four deep balls on Sunday. Every one of them was terribly underthrown. Every one of them, except for the last one, is short. You know what? You're breaking to the post on that one. To me, that one was on Hoyer all the way. That shorts was breaking towards the post. That's where you want to put that ball. You want to give your guy room to catch the ball out in the green. You don't want to put it on the sideline to make it a harder catch. To me, that was also on Hoyer.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is important to bring up, too, whenever we talk about football and quarterback accuracy. Now, accuracy isn't throwing the ball to the receiver. You know, that's what you may think when you're playing catch in the backyard or whatever, if you can throw the ball to the guy, you know, 10 yards away, hit him in the chest. But in football, you need to throw to a spot. And too often does Hoyer hit the receiver, but he throws it behind him or above him or below him. It never hits him in stride at all. And so the accuracy numbers are, you know, skewed. I bet he leaves, you know, a ton of yards off the table because of the yards after the catch where guys are having to turn back for the ball, slow down for it. And it really hinders this offense in a lot of ways. I also think you're really right about the deep ball, too. All those deep passes he threw were, you know, really underthrown. And it was, like, especially that one he threw to Washington end zone. I think T.J. Yates makes that touchdown. And, you know, Hoyer's a fine quarterback. I think your assessment is really good that he struggles in, you know, with his accuracy, but he is mobile and he's good in the pocket and he's a really good decision maker where he can know where he needs to go with the ball, you know, kind of immediately. And, you know, it works out fine, but whenever you have to depend on him to win, this is when you run into problems. And you can't win games when Hoyer's throwing the ball 43 times as long as you're not behind.
Yeah, and whenever he's blitzed, he absolutely sharts himself out there. You can see the panic kick in.
Well, let's go back to the run game. The offensive line, again, controlled the line of scrimmage, and this was done even without Brandon Brooks, who was sent to the hospital before the game. He said maybe he ate some bad food. There still was no actually any results at all what happened with him, and the thoughts are that he's going to miss this week as well. How ecstatic were you that they kept Derek Noone at right tackle instead of moving him to guard, and they actually started Abushi at right guard this game?
Yeah, it was great to see that decision. You know, we've talked about that, you know, quite a bit on the show, is that why are you moving, making multiple positions worse instead of just one position worse? So, you know, it was good to see that decision made. You know, Abushi was pretty bad on Sunday. But, you know, you got to take the small victories with that decision.
Mm-hmm. I know Abushi was fine getting to the second level. I do think the majority of their runs did come on the left-hand side, and I think Sufio had just a really good game from what I saw from the broadcast. But I think the interesting about this was that this was their best running performance this year. They had 126 yards on 26 carries, which comes out to 4.86 yards a carry. And the difference this week between the previous weeks was that Polk had 12 carries, Grimes had 5, and Blue had only 4. And this is the lowest carry total Blue has had since the Miami game, where he had just 3. So we talked about the running back situation before and how they bounce back and forth. Do you think Grimes and Polk showed enough to keep Blue away from the ball, or is this just going to be another outlier and we're going to see Blue get more carries the week after?
I think that both Polk and Grimes have shown enough to limit Blue snaps from the first game of the season. I think they've shown enough since last year, even if Polk wasn't even on the freaking roster. Look, Grimes is a homeless man's Arian Foster. He's got decent vision. He can catch the ball in the backfield. He can block. He struggled with the blitz pickup on Sunday, but you can't win them all. He is a homeless man's Arian Foster in that respect. He probably has the most vision of the running backs we have on the roster. Polk is more of a banger. He's the bang bang chicken and shrimp guy. But you know what? He's got some quicks. The guy I really want to see, I would love to see get 15 to 18 carries on this Sunday, is Akeem Hunt, the cornerback killer. You know, Stephen Gilmore, Del Revis, he's just going to take out all the cornerbacks. So let him take out a couple of the Patriots cornerbacks. McCourty. Let him take out McCourty. McCourty's a safety. He's probably the best guy back there. Let's take him out.
Yeah, I don't I would hope that we're done seeing Alfred Blue, because it's not like this all of a sudden he became bad this year. Last year he was the worst running back in football. This year he's been really bad again. And there's nothing really that shows that all on film. You know, he's a plotter. He gets the ball. He's either tries too hard to find the cutback or doesn't find it at all and runs 4 for 2 yards and falls down. He doesn't have any explosiveness. He can't break tackles. He can't make anybody miss. But every single time I've asked this question, every single time we've talked about it, the next week they go ahead and give Blue more carries and do something completely different. And so I would hope that we finally get a definite answer this time. There's finally the end of Alfred Blue as a starting running back. But they've been all over the place. It's hard for me to give any definite answer. But I would prefer to just see Grimes and Polk and Hunt get the majority of the carries. And, you know, it worked out really well on Sunday.
Yeah, and especially Hunt. It's really time to give the kid a chance. He's got the most. And I have talked about this, something I berate all the time about, the lack of athleticism that we have at our skill positions offensively. Akeem Hunt is not limited. I mean, this dude's got quicks. I would love to see him catching some balls out of the backfield. I'd love to see keeping him in motion, not running him out to the sideline on the screen. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him in motion going up against the linebacker. I'd dare any linebacker to try to cover him. Let's see him. I want him. Give me that guy.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they ran that New England play where they have him in the shotgun and he runs an out route against the outside linebacker. I mean, the Patriots have scored touchdown after touchdown after touchdown with that play. I think Hunt would be perfect for that.
Yes, here's tape of James White, and Deion Lewis. Go learn that.
Now, in this game, Hopkins was quiet for the majority of it. When Houston was down 21-13, though, he completely took over. He had 3 catches down the right sideline. One was a one-hander and out route, and the other two were just fades against man coverage. This ended up leading to Houston tying the game at 21. I don't have a question on BFT. I just really wanted to mention this.
I think that we're all behind that mention.
All right. Is there any other thoughts that you have on this offense?
That I mentioned it in our incompletions article. It's look. It's time to sit Bill down and say, look, every tight end we have on this roster is total and complete ass. Sit them all. Put Kendall Lamb out there. At least Lamb can catch the ball. So let's go with Kendall Lamb, your starting tight end, and let's just say fuck it. That's what we're going with from now on. Because I'm tired of seeing our tight ends commit multiple penalties, flail at passes, bat them away like they're like evil witch doctory stuff. Let's just get those guys off the field.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I wanted to say about the offense, I really like that touchdown pass through Griffin where the Bills weren't set at all. And it gave me, you know, horrible flashbacks to it was either the divisional championship against the Patriots or Monday Night Football against them, where they threw that touchdown pass to Aaron Hernandez and there's just nobody on him out there. And one of the linebackers didn't move over. But it was really beautiful to see that go the other way.
Yeah, but that was totally illegal motion. Nobody was set. Screw it, though. right.
Well, I guess we'll move on to the defense now. In this game, you know, Buffalo does have a top-10 offense, and like I wrote in the season preview post, they would be a Super Bowl contender if Rex Ryan didn't ruin that defense. And I kind of hate Rex Ryan for doing that. But Buffalo did score 30 points, and Houston had only allowed 35 points in their previous 5 games before this one. So, BFD, what did the Bills do specifically to put up this many points against the Houston defense that had a complete turnaround midway this season?
I got to say that I think the biggest thing, there are two big things that really stuck out. One of them was just flat luck, you know. Kevin Johnson did not play a poor game. I just can't stress that enough. He gave up several passes, obviously. He was burned, obviously. But on every one of those plays, was he not on his man? I mean, he was on guys. He was playing great coverage. And sometimes shit happens. And I think that's what happened to Kevin Johnson on Sunday. You're going to have games like that. Cornerbacks are going to have games like that. Yes, they were targeting him clearly because were you going to target Jonathan Joseph? Oh, wait, they got him later. But, you know, it was not an embarrassing game at all for Johnson. One of the things that stuck out to me, you know, I look at PFF after game wrap-ups a lot for the snap counts and the missed tackles. PFF ranked him positive. And, you know, when I thought about that, I thought, but he gave up. Wait a minute. He was on his guys. You know, he was all over people. So, stuff happens. Number two, J.J. Watt was being blocked by the entire Bills offensive line the entire game. I mean, they had five guys, well, maybe not all five, just seemed like it all game. But there were multiple plays where three offensive linemen got a piece of J.J. Watt. They slowed him down. Watt also might be playing a little nicked up. But, you know, even nicked up, J.J. Watt's the best defensive lineman in football. So they negated him. They did a great job taking him out of the game and letting, saying, okay, well, fuck it. Look, Clowney, Merciless, it's going to be up to you guys to beat us. Clowney played a great game. And, yeah, whatever. Clowney played a great game, but he's not J.J. Watt. And yeah. Merciless was kind of worthless. So, you know, they took out the Texans' best defensive player.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought Kevin Johnson, because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about. You know, I saw during Twitter in the game, there's so many just stupid things that were like, oh, this is Kevin Johnson's welcome to the league rookie moment this game, or blah, blah, blah. You know, Kevin Johnson's really having a rough one. Or Solomon, I think he's the worst broadcaster I've heard this year, by the way. He's a hack. And the entire time I spent, no, Solomon, that's not true. No, that's not true. No, that's not true. But whenever he gave up that second touchdown pass and Solomon's like, yeah, you know, they're attacking the weakest part of that secondary. Well, that's not, you know, true at all, Solomon. But the thing about Johnson is I think the only kind of screw-up he had was on that first touchdown. It looked like they were in zone coverage, and for whatever reason, he didn't pick up on that corner route quick enough, and he let the guy run past him before he broke on the ball. I think he was just confused before the snap. There's some miscommunication about who he was supposed to cover, maybe whether they were a man or zone or what. The long touchdown, that long pass, though, that was all in Quinnen Demps. And that was the biggest thing I think the Bills did as far as the passing game went, is that they attacked the middle of the field and they went against Quinnen Demps. Andre Howell was playing on the other side. He usually pairs up with Joseph, and Demps pairs with Johnson. But Demps just doesn't have the speed to cover the middle of the field, especially whenever he's lined up a little bit close to the box and he has to turn back around. On that second Johnson completion, the 53-yard one to Watkins, you see Johnson's outside leverage the entire time, and Demps has, you know, creeped up a little bit. And by the time Demps realized that he has this inside contain with Watkins, you know, he's 5 yards back, and he doesn't have the speed at all to catch up, and it was a poor mistake by his part. And then also that touchdown to the tight end, the seam route, that was also Quinnen Demps as well. In my defense article, and that always, you know, the way it works, whenever you write an article about why this is good or why this is bad, and they played the complete opposite way the week after. But I talked about why Demps is a huge problem in the secondary, and that the smart teams are going to single him out, you know, individually with their route schemes and attack him. The Bills did that, and it worked really well. The other thing I did see, too, was they ran outside a lot. I don't know, for whatever reason, that Crennel didn't have Clowney play more of the 3-4 base defense, you know, starting right away, and he had John Simon out there. You know, Clowney played last week. He looked healthy. He looked fine. And Simon just can't set the edge, and he's a terrible tackler. You know, he could barely even tackle Frank Gore against the Colts. What are you going to expect going to happen whenever he's going against LeSean McCoy? Like a real game breaker who can make people miss with great vision. And Simon missed multiple tackles this one. The Bills feast on outside runs, and they had six runs for 45 yards on the outside. And Houston was just kind of torching these big pass plays, you know, throwing the ball deep. I know Tyrod Taylor averaged 10 yards per pass attempt in this one, and also with the outside runs. And initially, they did do a very good job mitigating J.J. Watt, probably the best job I've seen, you know, a team scheme against him as well.
Yeah, and that's why you always take stats and take things with a grain of salt, is PFF has John Simon down for one missed tackle. Tyrod Taylor got him
that's crazy.
By himself. Yeah, I mean, Taylor owned him out in the open field. I mean, it's just, you know, that's why, you know, PFF, fine. You know, nobody's – Pobody's nerfed.
Mm-hmm.
Simpsons reference, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I miss – Listen, Watt had four tackles. He had two solo, one tackle for a loss. He had a sack that was negated by penalties by both teams. So instead of asking you, BFD, what was your favorite Watt play since he had a quiet game, what did you see Buffalo do to mitigate him in this one?
It was just getting multiple bodies on him. He was moving around to some extent. I think the reason it didn't jump out more is he just wasn't as effective. They were able to figure out where he was. One thing that jumped out at me, though, if you can say it, and he's got to be the biggest dick in the league, so I hate giving him any props, is Richie Incognito had a great game against him. Now,
yeah,
Incognito had help. Yeah, he got a lot of help. but the dude played a good game against J.J. Watt.
Yeah, my thing with Incognito is he was always too slow. Like, he was just a big, you know, he's an ultimate-looking jock, you know, just like a big, strong-shouldered guy, probably can do 30 beer bongs in a row and puts kids' heads in the toilet. But he was just too slow. And for whatever reason, since last year, I don't know what he – I guess he was doing a lot of – a lot like the ropes course over and over again to get his feet well, but his feet look a lot better. I saw four things, and I went back and watched some of it as well. But they left him unblocked from the backside, and Watt's, you know, great at chasing from the backside. And so they left him unblocked, and what they did was they were pulling a play side player to the backside to cut him. And so whenever you do this a few times, it makes Watt more wary. It slows him down. He can't just chase from the backside and make tackles if he's worried that the fullback's going to come over and cut him. When they ran at him, they made sure to double-team him. There's been too many teams this year who run towards Watt direction and leave him one versus a guy, especially against tight ends. It's impossible to have any success like that. And also, I saw them run some double teams where they even brought the fullback as well to actually triple-team him on some of them runs. They also ran outside a whole lot, and they cut him a lot, too, to try to slow him down. And even if you don't bring down the player at the cut block, just by getting that defender's hands down, you're slowing him down by a second or whatever, and that's the difference between getting a clean run and a tackle for a loss.
Yeah, and you mentioned the guys. What I saw a lot was the tight end use, and we've talked about that a couple of times on the show, is that seems to be a really big thing these days, is bringing the play side tight end back across to cut back the pursuing defensive end or outside linebacker. And Mulligan and Charles Clay both did a good job of just getting in his way.
Yeah, and it really slows down guys on the backside. And, you know, the quicker these defensive players get, the more of like a weapon that is to slow down those backside pursuits.
Yep.
Well, I guess I would say that Clowney probably had his best game of his career in this game. He had three tackles, one sack, two tackles for loss, and a hit. What did you see from Clowney? What analysis do you have of his performance?
I think this was a game, you know, I keep saying, I think I've said it every week since June or so, that this is the week Clowney's going to break out. Actually, since the beginning of the season, he looked so much better than I thought he would. The sack he got was against Mulligan, a tight end. So it was almost a gimme sack. I mean, he went right through Mulligan like he wasn't even there. But, you know, otherwise, you see the freakish athleticism. You see that inside move on a couple of runs, the inside swim that he kind of does. Once again, if we get together for Christmas and get by this guy like a move or two, like on Madden, he's gonna be a pretty good player. But he's gotta start taking the next step because he's just purely a physical specimen at this point.
Yeah, and I mean he is just an athlete. And I think whenever he's in space especially, his quickness is just ridiculous. And he's too quick for tackles, for most tackles in the league. He's also just too strong for tight ends. And, both of us, we haven't really complained at all about Clowney, his production, because whenever we did our season preview, we both agreed that we just want to see flashes of athleticism. And he's done that all year this year. So now going into next season, we need to see the flashes of athleticism turning to skill, which should turn to production. But the one thing I've kind of seen him do is he kind of does have a pass rush move. Now, it's not like a spin or a rip or a swim or a stem or anything like that. He does this thing that where he'll dip his shoulder and fake inside or outside and then just cut back the opposite direction. And because players are afraid of his speed, they'll overreact to any movement he makes. And so when he cuts back the opposite way, he'll have a wide open hole. And he got his sack against the Bills, against Mulligan doing this, and he did it against a few times against the Saints too to really open up his pass rush. Now, it's not like a real pass rush move, but it's the makings of something. And that quickness and athleticism is there, though. And so we probably won't see that skill happen this year, but it's still kind of a wild card for this defense moving forward.
Yeah, and I got to say, that's a move he came from. He had in college. That was kind of his signature move, was that dip. Yeah. Especially faking to the outside and dipping back in is, you know, I would call his signature pass rushing move. But I do think that the game he had against the Saints was better. He went against better talent, I think, against the Saints. And, I don't know. Maybe I can take that back. But I think he was more disruptive in the Saints game than he was against the Bills.
Yeah, he was closer. I think if you look at hits or hurries, he may have more. I think the one thing, though, is that against the Saints is a lot of those came off hurries. I mean, off stunts. And in this game, it was a lot more one-versus-one situations that he was able to take advantage of rather than having, you know, Merciless or somebody else do the dirty work for him.
That's a great point.
So we'll have we have a question from Captain Ron here before we start talking about playoffs. But the question is, the premise of Star Wars, you just spend an entire week living a full-throttle experience to one of these two guys. Which one do you choose and why? J.J. Watt or Han Solo? Now, of all the questions we've had, this is probably the most original one we've gotten. And what's your answer, BFT?
Star Wars sucks. Matt and I were talking before the show started when we saw Captain Ron's question. And my comment was, I haven't seen any of the Star Wars movies since the first three when they came out in the theaters. Okay, that's how much I like Star Wars movie. I tried to watch the 77 one, whichever that one is. I remember standing in line waiting to get in the theater when I was 7 years old. But I couldn't make it more than like 45 minutes in. It was just a bad buddy movie. So, yeah, my answer is J.J. Watt, Ron. Sorry, man.
Yeah.
Peace.
And me personally, I never had this real Star Wars experience all growing up. I saw the prequels in theaters, and I thought I'm okay. I just thought that there's too much, talking involved, too much of the politics that kind of turned me off. And my favorite thing about Star Wars, though, is even a movie. It's Star Wars Knights of the Republic, which was like a role-playing game on Xbox One. And that game has the greatest story I've ever played in any video game. And I remember being like 13 and just crapping my pants by the twist in that game. And that's my favorite Star Wars thing. So I guess I would prefer to hang out with my character I made when I was 13 playing Star Wars Knights of the Republic than J.J. Watt, because we've just had, I grew up with that person, that imaginary character. So that's my answer.
Wow. Yeah, and I don't know if it'd be J.J. Watt. I think I'd probably want to – I don't know who I'd want to hang out with. It'd be somebody – yeah, but I don't know. I'd want to hang out – I don't know. I guess the crazy side's starting to come out of me, from that old school crazy side. It's something a little bit more wild than – waking up at 5 in the morning to go work out thing. I'd want to hang out with. Yeah, screw that. I'd want to be doing other things.
Yeah, I don't know who I would pick either. Maybe like a 23-year-old Brian Cushing. Not this newer Brian Cushing with a kid and all that. I think that's probably who I would pick.
He's too much of a meathead for me. I'd have to go with somebody else.
Yeah, but I'm always down.
Like Arian Foster. Like Arian Foster. He'd be my
guy. All right, well, we'll start talking about the playoffs now. And I'm really bummed. I screwed up my incompletions post. I wanted to write about how we're at the point of the season where it's kind of like whenever you watch a movie and you start looking at the clock and you start piecing together how this thing's going to end. And now for the Texans, there is an end in sight. It's going to come down to how they play against Indy for whether they make the playoffs or not. And then I went and looked at the tiebreaker, and I screwed up and thought Houston was one game back, but I forgot they beat the Jets compared to the Colts for the tiebreaker. So I messed that up. But anyways, we'll do a redemption on this. And heading in this game, or heading in last week, Houston and Indy were playing Pittsburgh and Buffalo, and you probably know that if you're listening. And they lost, and now they're a game behind the Jets, Kansas City, and Pittsburgh. And they're both tied with Buffalo. And Buffalo beat both of them, so they have a tiebreaker. Now, entering this game, each of these teams had less than 5% odds for the wild card. And I think they were like 3.2 and 4%. And now they've dropped down to 0.2% for Indy and 0.8% for Houston. So, Boston yesterday didn't really hurt their playoff hopes that much. They pretty much extinguished all hope of the wild card. Now, I do kind of want to clarify how this thing's going to work. If Houston loses to New England and wins out, and if Indy loses to Houston and wins out, Houston will probably get in because of the fifth tiebreaker. It looks like strength of schedule. The other four tiebreakers are record against each other, record in the division, record versus the conference, and record versus common opponents. If this scenario unfolds where Houston beats Indy and wins out and loses to New England, then they'll be tied in all these except for the fifth one, which Houston does seem to have the upper hand in. Now, I really don't know why they don't just use point differential. It seems like a much better stat that kind of shows how good a team is, but I don't make the rules at all.
Yeah, reading Brett's post, all I wanted to do was just guzzle the whiskey afterward. It just was, I mean, look, I'm a math fan, but man, that's like all the scenarios right there, and whatever kind of magic voodoo we have to do to get that last wild card spot is, you know, it's the fifth tiebreaker, for crikey's sake. Come on, man.
Yeah, the wild card spot's thing that happened, but for that division, that's when the tiebreakers can matter, because Houston Indy, if this scenario unfolds, Houston and Indy are going to be tied for everything besides that fifth tiebreaker. And for Houston, again, for sure, they're going to have to win out. And for Indy, again, for sure, they're going to have to win out. But also, the New York Times had a playoff odds calculator, and this thing was pretty cool. Pretty much you can pick if whichever team wins that week, you can go through every single game for the rest of the year. What is the probability of them making the playoffs? You can kind of see what it takes to happen for these teams. And I did it, you know, using a scenario that Houston loses to New England this week and then wins every game after that. And if this happens, they have a 74% chance of making the playoffs. So for them to make the playoffs, it's still going to hinge somewhat on how the Jets perform, how the Bengals perform, and how the Chiefs perform towards the end of the year.
Chiefs, yeah.
So like we said a few weeks ago, you know, there was a hope for the wild card at the time, but this season it's pretty much going to come down to if Houston or Indy can sweep the AFC South at the end of the year, and now here we are where this is actually happening.
Yeah, and this is no longer a gimme. I mean, at the beginning of the year, Jacksonville and the baby-eating sister fuckers both look like gimmies. I just don't think that's true anymore. They beat each other up on Sunday.
That was a
Marcus Mariota. Yeah, Marcus Mariota is not Zach Mettenberger. Clearly, the Jaguars can legitimately drop 42. Or I guess they technically did 39. So these are not, I mean, even as bad as the Flaming Thumbtacks defense is, these are, you know, the offense, the Titans offense could potentially put up some points on us. I don't think that's realistic. The one that worries me is Jacksonville. That really worries me.
Yeah, what worries me about Jacksonville is that they have a really good run defense. I think their run defensive DVOA is like second or third, but their pass defensive DVOA is 31st. And what is Houston not very good at? Throwing the football, even though they did have a success against them when they played earlier this year. But yeah, the Jags are nasty, especially, you know, Bortles is good. He just makes like three really stupid plays a game that ruin them. And for example, last week he threw that red zone interception and he had that snap go over his head that the Titans returned for a touchdown that won them that game. And, you know, Bortles just kind of has that Geno Smith disease where all the pieces are there, but they just do three really stupid things that kind of screw up the entire team or screw up their chances to win.
Yeah, but that's still, it's a legit offense and it's a legit run defense.
Yeah, and you are right, though. It's not going to be a gimme, and it would be the most Houston Texans thing ever if they beat Indy in Indy for the first time and they lose to the Jaguars in Week 17 at home.
It would be perfect.
Yeah. And also, if we look at Football Outsiders playoff odds, they came out a little bit later tonight, so I didn't get a chance to get the whole, you know, schedule like I'm usually able to, looking at, you know, Pittsburgh and Kansas City and all that. But Houston's at 46.2% chance, and Indy's at 52.7%. And Indy is playing the Tennessee Titans this week, I believe. And then next week, when they play Houston, the week after that, Andrew Luck should be back for this one. So it's going to get kind of crazy, I guess, after next week. But I guess the point is that this game against New England isn't as important as people can make it out to be.
No, this is all about taking care of business in the AFC South. I mean, if we beat the Patriots, great, but it's not a deal killer.
All right, so I guess before we get into our season preview for this week, we got an even sillier question from our old favorite masthead friend, Uprooted Texan. And I'm just going to read it because I don't even really know at all what it means, and you can answer this one. So his question was, if someone releases a massive taco fart at the Temple of Durga in Varanasi, India, what is the likelihood via the butterfly effect that will cause Tom Brady to fall down while on the flight from Boston to Houston? And how will Cornell game plan for this possibility?
I mean, first of all, brother, ask a good question. I think this is a very, you know, we're bringing India, so we're bringing a little bit of a little bit of Buddhism in here, a little bit of and we got a Durga mention. I mean, we're covering a lot of bases here, people. So I think we have to answer this with the seriousness in which it was asked. So first of all, you got to assume that taco is. I mean, are we talking about like a Taco Bell taco with onions? Or Taco Bell burrito with onions, or Taco Bell taco with onions, you know, because the onions are going to play an important role in that sulfur factor, right? so we have to consider that. And is that gust of wind, is it going to be big enough to create the butterfly effect all the way across the ocean? Because, I mean, you know, the butterfly effect is everything, right?
And also, aluminum may have a sway on it as well, too, depending on where the wind's blowing from, you know?
That's true. So we got a lot of shit working here. Now, what we really need is we need to sacrifice a chicken to make this happen. So we sacrifice the chicken. It creates kind of a void in our souls for that instant. Because, I mean, we're just sacrificing the fucking chicken, right? So we're sacrificing the chicken. And we're going to create that void so that fart comes this way. And then we'll waft it back up towards Boston way. And then Tom Brady fall down and go boom. Now, catch it, how to game plan. Well, no, that's right, because we're going to be caught crossing the equator with this shit, right?
Yeah.
So we got Romeo Crennel. How does Romeo Crennel game plan for this? Over dinner.
That's get that man a lot of tacos this week.
Yeah. We'll start the butter. We'll start the gassy butterfly effect here. In fact, I'll do my best to work on that. Wife and kids will love that.
Yeah, you do that, and I'll watch the butterfly effect just tonight before I go to bed, and do my part and, you know, do some inside research for it. But so this week, in case you didn't know, Houston plays New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football, and the game was flexed from an afternoon game to the late night. How horrified are you of this game on Sunday?
Oh, I'm horrified every time the Texans are on national TV. I mean, if there's a team that's going to absolutely gag, that's not the Colts, it's going to be us. So, wow, when I saw that, I literally did a facepalm when I saw that. I'm not excited about that, and especially against the Patriots. I mean, the Patriots have a long-standing tradition of absolutely pantsing us on national TV.
Oh, it's happened too many times. I remember last time it happened was, you know, 2012, and that was whenever they lost to the Vikings, Patriots, and Colts, and blew their chance for a first-round bye and a chance to play in Houston after being undefeated for that long. And the thing I really don't like about it is, you know, there's no – why couldn't Steelers and Bengals be the Sunday night game? Why couldn't Falcons-Panthers be the Sunday night game? Instead, they had to, you know, flex this Texans game just because they hate us and want to, you know, ensue as much, you know, death and destruction as possible. And, yeah, I'm scared to death. I hate watching Houston play New England, and I hate watching Houston play New England at night, especially after that Monday Night Football loss, you know, from a few years back or whatever.
Yeah, and now we also have to put up – oh, my God, it's going to kill me. Dead. Yes, I just sounded like a – 13-year-old girl in the ankle, is that we're going to have to listen to this entire byline of Tom Brady is pissed after losing three straight games. You know what? You know how that affects the football game? It doesn't. But we're going to have to listen to that.
That
all
day, is this,
throughout the entire game.
That is just a demise of the Patriots because they lost to the Eagles and they gave up 3 non-offensive touchdowns. We're going to have to listen to that all over and over again as well. And, God. Yeah, it's not going to be too much fun.
It's going to be a great game to watch on mute.
Yeah. And, well, I guess the Patriots, they won't be as good as usual because they are missing Rob Gronkowski. They are missing Edelman. And did you watch the game against the Eagles? And did you see, you know, them do anything differently to try to spread the ball around the passing game?
Yeah, a little bit, and which mostly consisted of actually throwing Keyshawn Martin the rock several times.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look at it this way. Your wide receivers are Danny Amendola, who is – nobody will get that reference. Yeah, but he's fragile. I mean, the guy's like Mr. Glass Jaw. You got Brandon LaFell, who was ass for years in Carolina. and Keyshawn Martin who dropped that pass. That's
and
your three leading
Johnson
wide receivers.
Too.
And
Demaryius
Johnson.
Sorry for them as well.
God, that's just that is got
targets.
And then the one catches is Scott Chandler. It's a pretty darn good football player. So you lose Gronk. You know, Chandler's no Gronk. He's no, you know, Aaron Hernandez. But, you know, he's not a bad pass catcher. He's was the equivalent to, you know, he's 6'6", and he can Jordan Cameron. That's the guy I'm looking for. That's who he's equivalent to. He is not a bad football player at all. So they have lost some weaponry, but they still have at least a couple of guys. We're not going to be able to cover White out of the backfield. There's just no way.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to talk about. I mean, I went back and watched the Eagles game, and the Patriots are kind of interesting where they've done what Carolina did. They've done what Seattle did heading this year. And that's not invest a whole lot of money in their offensive line or resources. And for Carolina, it's the fact that they have Cam Newton who can run the ball and throw the ball and make the entire offense work without having to destroy the line of scrimmage. Seattle gets away with it because they have the best quarterback as far as pocket presence goes in Russell Wilson. They have two of the best running backs in the league, Thomas Rawls, who came out of nowhere. But Lynch led the running backs last year in broken tackles. So they have two guys who transcend their offensive line. They don't need to pay for those positions as high as others because of how good those two guys are. And the Patriots do it as well, mostly with how quickly Edelman and Gronkowski can get open. Brady doesn't have to hold the ball for a long time with those two on the field. The catch is, though, without the missing, Brady's having to hold the ball longer. He's having to deal with more pressure. And New England hasn't really been able to deal with that so far, you know, very well yet. And this is only, you know, after one game. But I do think the problem for New England in this game is going to just be if Houston can get pass rushes, they're going to have extra time to get to Brady and how they're going to be able to react with putting more pressure on their offensive line.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you nailed it. This is how the Chiefs beat us. I mean, the Chiefs set the benchmark for beating the Houston Texans the first game of the season. Get rid of the freaking ball immediately. Do not allow J.J. Watt and Clowney to come up the field. And that's exactly what we're going to see on Sunday is Tom Brady's not going to hold on to the ball. He's going to get rid of the ball as quickly as possible so that J.J. Watt doesn't have to hurt him.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing working Houston's favor, though, is that these quick passes are going to, you know, White, that running back you just mentioned, who had a really good game last week and looks so much like Deion Lewis, is scary. But the rest of these passes are going to Keyshawn Martin. They're going to Demaryius Johnson. They're going to Scott Chandler. They're going to Brand LaFell. But Brand LaFell mostly works down the field. And they're going to Scott Chandler. So the weapons aren't as good. So Houston is going to have the chance to actually have a pass rush this game. If we even look back, you know, 2 years ago with Tom Brady's release, whenever Watt got so close to getting all those sacks against New England, but he just missed by maybe 0.3 seconds. In this game, Watt could maybe have like a class performance just because of the way the situation has turned out for him.
Yeah, because we're going to get pressure. I mean, have no doubt. We're going to get pressure on Tom Brady all game. You mentioned it, you know, at the lead. This is a team that does not block well, period. So we're going to get pressure. It's just a matter of if Tom Brady can get rid of the ball. This is, once again, we're going to go back to that first game. If the Texans are going to – and we did it a little bit on Sunday, I noticed again. We're playing cornerbacks 7 yards off the wide receiver at the line of scrimmage. We can't do that. Tom Brady will eat us alive if we do that. So we're going to have to play more press and not allow the instant separation that we allow when we play that far off the ball.
So what's going to have to happen for Houston to actually win this game?
Well, I thought we'd already covered that with the Taco and Varanasi India butterfly. I thought we'd already covered that, man.
Yeah, I wasn't on my toes as much because I've wrote these questions before. You know, UT really threw a wrench in this engine of mine.
Yeah, seriously. No, how do we win on Sunday? It's going to come down to the defense. I mean, as bad as the Patriots are on the offensive line and their skill positions offensively, it's kind of the exact opposite defensively. They have got a scary defensive squad. The defensive line is playing well. The linebackers are playing well. Dante Hightower, Chandler Jones, Jabal Sheard. You know, Jones has 11 sacks. I mean, this is not – this is how they've been winning games this year, is defensively, believe it or not. Tom Brady's doing enough to win games, but defensively is where they're really standing up against our offense. So, to me, it's going to come down to, can we stop Tom Brady? And, boy, even with that crap that he has at the skill positions, it's going to come down to scheme. We're going to have to outsmart Tom Brady. We're going to have to outsmart the scheme. We're going to have to figure out how to stop – the running backs out of the backfield, splitting out the running backs, because that's something we can't grasp, get our heads around when we play the Patriots, splitting out running backs to wide receiver. And if we can get to Tom Brady to, you know, the Drew Brees effect, where Brees was so scared after the first quarter when we played the Saints. So these are the things that we're counting on to win on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me what's going to have to happen is that Houston's going to have to play kind of a perfect game where they're going to have to get a lead early. They're going to have to run the ball a lot. Hopkins is going to have to carry the passing game against Malcolm Brown, who's turned to a top-five cornerback this year. They're going to have to get a really good pass rush on Tom Brady, and they're going to need to win the turnover battle as well. Every single thing's going to have to go right for them to win this game, and they're not going to – they're going to have to put the ball as far as away from Brian Hoyer as they can. So they put Brian Hoyer all the way in the end zone and put the football on the other side of the field and just have Brian Hoyer sit there. That's how far he needs to be away from this ball and for him to win this game. And if this, and then if that happens, there's just a chance they're going to win. And it's kind of the same thing that occurs whenever you shoot yourself in the foot and you limit yourself with your quarterback play.
Yeah, because this, once again, we're going to be really counting on Brian Hoyer and the offense to put up. I think we need to put up a minimum, at least 24 points. I was going to say 28, but I mean, we're talking that territory, and we averaged 21, and we've done that in trash time and against some poor defenses. So we're going to have to ask the offense to do a lot to win this game. And, you know, good things don't come from that.
Yeah. And even saying that, I could see Houston holding New England to like 13 in this one, maybe just based on their past performance lately and just based on the weapons that New England has. But I don't think coming into it, you could expect that. I think it's possible, but I think what you're going to need to see is that Houston's going to need to score at least 24, 28 points in this game.
I think it's a very fair statement because, you know, this is a really crappy skill position team. They're just really bad. I mean, I wonder if I should go try out. I can at least catch.
What matchup are you most excited for in this one?
For this one, you know, I really want to say J.J. Watt against the offensive line of the Patriots. But I'm gonna go again with Clowney because I think what we're gonna see is we're gonna see a repeat. We're gonna see a lot of bodies on J.J. Watt in this game, and this is another game that Clowney could really say, "Look, I'm getting one on one," which is stupid, but that's what's gonna happen because you only have so many offensive linemen. But he's gonna have some one on one time against some tight ends and some tackles, and good things could possibly happen from that. So I'm gonna say it again. At some point in time, Clowney is going to come out with a 2-3 sack game where he is going to absolutely pwn the opposition's offensive line, and I'm going to call it again for this game. Damn it, if I call it every game, I'm going to be right at some point, right?
Yeah, or just say manifest destiny before every time. You know, it hasn't happened yet, but we're still working our way to the West. I'm going to go with Keyshawn Martin versus Quentin Demps, and I guarantee you that Keyshawn Martin's going to run a streak route down the middle of the field, and he's going to run right by Quentin Demps for a touchdown. I'm closing my eyes right now, and I'm just seeing it happen, and I'm just seeing myself look up at the heavens and just shaking my head at God for being such a grass ever. Because I guarantee you that Keyshawn Martin's going to catch like a 65-yard touchdown pass running right past Quentin Demps.
Yeah, and you talk through the Sammy Watkins play perfectly. That's Quentin Demps. You know, there's a reason he's bounced around the league, and it's because that's not his strength. We're going to be asking him to do things he doesn't do all that well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I'd still rather have him out there over Raheem Moore or the other crapper out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. And it's also kind of amazing how much of an impact Andre Hale made on this defense. You know, we even saw last week he's so good that Robert position, and it's weird to think that, you know, little Andre Hale, sixth-round pick, was able to do what he's done to make this defense that much better. I guess it's also interesting to see how things compound whenever you can fix one problem and bring out that skills out there and how that affects the next guy and the next guy and the next guy. That was, you know, probably the most interesting thing I learned from that article I wrote last week. But anyways, are you ready to make your prediction for this one?
Weeks. Yeah. Oh, so you want me to make my prediction? Well, unfortunately,
yeah.
The mass has this member of the mass is going to be negative. So I'm going to go 31-13 Patriots again. It's just there's history here. Here's the biggest problem with the game that I've got, and I'll just be very honest, is that I really see that Bill O'Brien is going to really try to outthink Bill Belichick, and it's going to cause bad things to happen. Again, this is my trust in Bob as a coach, which isn't much, and that Tom Brady is going to do Tom Brady things. He's the best quarterback in the NFL right now, with the possible exception of Aaron Rodgers, and Tom Brady can still win games with a crap cast. I mean, this is not the first time he's gone into a season with wide receivers who are absolutely worthless. So I do see this as a Patriots, and a fairly easy Patriots victory.
Yeah, and I did forget to mention that we were both wrong last week against Buffalo, and we're now each 5-7 on the season. And I guess one point I want to make real fast is, you know, whenever I wrote my season preview, a lot of things you'll see is that they'll look at the current schedule and they're going to say, I can't see them losing to Atlanta. I can't see them losing to Miami. I can't see them losing to Kansas City. And then you actually make picks week to week and you're not very good at it, let alone picking weeks, 15 weeks in advance and trying to come up with how the schedule is going to occur. That's not the best way to do it. The best way to do it is look at what you assume the performance is going to be and work from there. But anyways, we're both 5-7. We're both tied. And we're both going to make the same pick this week. I'm picking New England to win 31-20. I think it's too much to expect them to hold the Patriots to 13, even though it's possible. And for the Texans to win this game, they're going to have to hold them to 13 points or so, something in that neighborhood, just because this New England Patriots defense is really good. And also, if Gronk and Edelman were healthy, I would pick them to win 41-10. And like the Colts, I don't see Houston beating them until it actually happens. And so until that occurs, I'm going to pick against Houston these games every single time.
Yeah, because we've had two games now. And again, let's put this in context. We've had two games this year where we have specifically asked Brian Hoyer to win us the game. That was against Buffalo and against the Colts the first game. That's twice.
Mm-hmm.
And we have seen, to call them pitiful performances from him from those two games is an understatement. If we're going to ask Brian Hoyer to beat the Patriots, we have to.
Yeah. Do you have anything else you want to say at all or anything else you need to get off your chest?
I just can't believe the masthead is always so negative.
We're realists.
Yeah, that's going to be – and as damn long as we keep getting shit, for every time we try to talk realistic analysis, I'm going to keep driving that into the ground, but I'll end it. I won't do it past the season. But it just kills me. You know, if you would have taken the Texans to win every game, you'd be 6-6 and we're 5-7. And you know what?
Yeah.
We paid the price for being optimistic. So,
yeah.
You know,
we're just too real.
Context.
We're too real.
We're too real. They can't handle the haters can't handle our realness, reality.
Yeah, I'm excited for the end of the year whenever they go 8-8 and I get to go back through my season preview post and kind of like go back through and analyze the whole thing. And that should be a lot of fun. But anyways, that should be some good, you know, stick people's face back in the poop. But anyways, thank you for listening tonight. And thanks for everyone who asked questions. You know, thank you, Captain Ron. Thank you for Uproot Texan. And also, we miss you very much, UT. And if you enjoy the show, tell all your friends, to all your family members. If you bought your child an iPod or a friend an iPod for Christmas, just put a bunch of Bell Red radios on there and give it to them. I'm sure that will make that iPod even that much better. If you listen to us on iTunes, go ahead and rate and review the show as well. We will be back next week at the same time at 7 p.m. Central. I'm Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to Bell Red Radio. And thanks for talking to me again tonight, BFT.
Woo!